Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling this meeting of the Taxes Committee to order for March 7th, 2023. Thanks, everyone, for being here. First order of business is to approve the minutes from March 1st. Vice Chair Norris, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Chair Gomez, and I will move the minutes from the March 1st meeting.
Excellent. Vice Chair Norris moves the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries, and the minutes for March 1st, 2023 are adopted. All right, so the first bill up is House File 2311. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bierman. The chair is going to move that House File 2311 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Bierman, please let us know about your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Pleasure to be among you for House File 2311 this afternoon. Members, this bill is designed to increase the opportunity for all Minnesotans to have access to a solar systems rebate in every county of our state. Not everyone can participate in a program like Solar Rewards offered through Xcel Energy Territory or Minnesota Power's Solar Sense. With this bill, every homestead, every farm, every business is able to apply and receive a tax credit on the investment of a solar energy system. This is a tried and true formula and good public policy. This program has helped spread solar across every county in Iowa. Their program has historically sold out every year, resulting in wait lists. In Iowa, this bill has generated hundreds of millions of dollars in local economic activity. If enacted here, we will create jobs across the state of Minnesota. Of course, saving home and business owners money on electric bills with a clean, renewable resource is another primary purpose of this legislation. The typical system pays off in 8 to 12 years, but the savings start immediately. It is an investment upgrade in one's home as well, increasing property value. Offering this small tax credit is an added incentive that will encourage more Minnesotans to make the energy investment in their future. State-level policies like this bill are instrumental in paving the way to a more sustainable, clean energy future. It is good for the pocketbook of all Minnesotans when we import less of our energy needs. It is good for the grid, it is good for the economy, and it is good for the environment. Members, please take a look at the letters of support. And now, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to the testifiers and the public, please.
Thank you very much, Representative Bierman. So I have a few testifiers signed up. First up, Logan O'Grady. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. This is the first time I've appeared before this committee this session, so thanks for having me. But just as a quick intro, MNSEA is a 501c6 trade organization. We are completely funded, driven, and directed by over 140 member companies who employ over 5,000 Minnesotans within and throughout the solar and energy storage industries in Minnesota. My role here today is to really provide an industry perspective of what this bill can do for us. And what I try to tell lawmakers and legislators when I talk with them, these bills are important because they provide business signals, right? Minnesota competes in a 50-state marketplace, and we want to put signals out there that show that we're a great place for companies to come, grow, and invest in our workforce. This bill, HF 2311, adopts a business signal that benefits Minnesota customers who can cut their energy bills while also helping Minnesota transition to a clean energy economy, making solar more affordable for everyone. Thank you to Representative Bierman for working with us the last few years on this bill. We really appreciate your leadership. And so in conclusion, I'll stick around, but for every dollar that we invest in tax incentives, we leverage $5 in private investment into solar and into our workforces here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Grady. Next up, Griffin Dooling.
Madam Chair, Griffin is not here
okay,
at this
no
time,
problem.
So we can go to the next one.
Cool. Sarah, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Webby, please come up. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Webby. I'm a policy analyst with All Energy Solar in St. Paul, Minnesota, where I've worked for the last 8 years. St. Paul is our headquarters. We employ about 250 people here, and Minnesota is a primary market for us. The majority of our work has been in the residential segment, although we do serve commercial customers as well as agricultural and municipal customers. And I am testifying in support of this bill today because at the end of the day, these programs take a small investment on the part of the state and use it to leverage a great deal of private investment to deploy solar. And that private investment is investment that, people who own solar are looking forward to accruing their own savings from, but it also will save the rest of the ratepayers money. This is investment that the ratepayers are avoiding making on their own behalf. So it's in a way socializing the cost of going solar across many people. In support of the tax credit, we'd also like to say that the state can support people across Minnesota in a way that the federal tax credit that's available might not necessarily be able to, in terms of helping people from a variety of income backgrounds and people from far reaches of the state that we haven't been able to access. Our primary business has been driven by incentives in Excel territory. We're very excited to connect to Greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Webby. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? Not seeing anyone hop up. Member discussion. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is maybe more to research or staff. In our area, we have a lot of what we would consider shouses, house shed towards sort of structures where individuals have a business in part of their building, home in the other part. So when these credits are separated by home versus commercial, how would that apply to a situation like that?
Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Weiner, as I read the bill, the limit for the credit is $2,500 for homeowners and $15,000 for businesses. The limitations are based on the property classifications, so I think it would depend on the property classifications. And we may want to ask Mr. Swanson if he's available to talk about the circumstances under which something might be, a home that's used partially as a business, what classifications might apply in those circumstances.
Well, sure, even the zoning on some of these would be considered, you can have a homestead, but also a commercial on the same property.
All right. Mr. Swanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Weiner, it's possible that these properties would be split classified, meaning that they could potentially receive more than one classification. I'm not real familiar with these types of properties, but if it is the case that these could be receiving both of these classifications, it may be something that the committee wants to look at in terms of how these two credit amounts are defined in the bill.
Representative Weiner.
Well, being on planning and zoning in our area for quite a few years, I know that if you have a 40-acre parcel which you're running a business off of, you can have multiple zoning classifications on that property. The homestead can be separated off, but you could still have buildings on that homestead that are part of the commercial. So you're going to have different classifications, and that's what I want clarification on, or would like to have some clarification on, as to is an individual now going to be able to qualify for the commercial or just the residential on those type of businesses, because there is a lot of home-based businesses out in Greater Minnesota, and this creates a little bit of confusion as to what people would be able to qualify for.
Okay, thank you, Representative Weiner. It sounds like we might need to do a little bit of follow-up between Representative Bierman, Representative Weiner, and our research staff. I think that's an important question, and so as we're moving forward with this process, we'll just make sure to clarify that, if you guys wouldn't mind connecting after committee. Representative Bierman.
I agree. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Perfect. Is there any further member discussion? Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just I came in late, so if my question was answered or asked, I apologize to the committee for any...
We'll forgive you this time.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And just the testifier, are you with the solar companies
all,
or...
All Energy Solar. All Energy Solar. Sarah Webby, yeah.
Thank you. And just, you know, just kind of in general, we hear a lot about, you know, we're trying to encourage development. And because of the high costs, we need to have programs like this, and that's why I imagine this potentially is moving forward. At what point, as of the cost structure, do you see that it will just be able to sustain itself? Because usually, you know, I kind of view this kind of like a, you know, like an unfriendly kid. You know, the parents have to tie a pork chop around their neck for the dog to play with it. And you know, this is kind of in that realm. Like, hey, you know, this isn't very attractive as far as cost. You know, at what point will it be enough? You know, this is obviously solar's been around for a long time, you know, for 30, 40 years, and it seems like none of these programs ever seem to go away. When do you think the industry could actually support itself without, you know, kind of that pork chop approach?
None of us are taking parenting lessons from Representative Suzuki. Ms. Webby, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Spudzinski, that's a great question and one that we've heard many times before. And, you know, having worked in solar for the last approaching 9 years, I can tell you that there has been cost, you know, reduction that's happened in many segments of the industry, from panels to inverters to soft costs to permitting costs. It's not always linear. And one thing that is taking place right now that is changing our supply chain, well, there are a few things changing our supply chain. First thing is that the international market is exploding, and we are competing in an international market for product, and that has made it harder to get product, resulting in product becoming more expensive. And the second thing is that there is a focus on creating a domestic supply chain that we support. We obviously want control over the cost that we're putting into building these projects and control over the complete supply chain. And so these incentives are, you know, helping the market form around that new domestic supply chain, again, while investing a small amount of money on the part of the state to leverage private investment.
Thank you. Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate, you know, the conversation about kind of that competition. So, you know, essentially you're talking about, you know, that because of it exploding, there's a lot more demand in market. So would you estimate that the cost of solar panels are actually going up because of that that competition internationally?
Ms. Webby.
So there are many more components to the entire system than just the solar panels themselves. And while price for solar panels and the raw goods that go into a solar panel has fluctuated quite a bit in the last few years, the other thing we're dealing with would be the price increases that normal electrical types of industries have had to absorb. Infrastructure costs for breakers has gone up sharply in the last few years due to COVID. And so we're dealing with all those same things, as well as, yes, a supply chain that has to absorb some price shocks due to international competition and volatility.
Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just from an industry standard, you know, if tax credits like this didn't exist, you know, how much market share do you think wouldn't exist for you as an industry?
How much
would you lose? How many projects wouldn't happen?
Ms. Webby.
I am not certain how to answer that question. Could you clarify that for me?
Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because obviously, Madam Chair, and I forget your name, otherwise I would refer to you by that. But, you know, the, what's that?
Is that on the agenda?
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't see that. There we go. Weeble?
Webby.
Webby.
I already messed it up, so thank I'm going to, yeah, normal. Webby.
Well, I'm just one of another chain for that, Ms. Webby. From a perspective on, you know, if, you know, there's a reason that this is before a committee, right? You're trying to encourage behavior by creating a tax credit. And my question to you is, if you're trying to encourage behavior, how much of that behavior would occur without this tax credit?
Well, we don't have the tax credit currently, Madam Chair. We don't have the tax credit currently, and the behavior is still occurring, but we're hoping to have it occur in places where we haven't before seen it occur en masse. There are rural parts of Minnesota where a solar salesperson routinely fields the question of, you know, why are there any incentives for me? And those folks often feel left out. They feel that, you know, the state might be overlooking them as a resource to invest in. And so those are the people that we're hoping to work with, the ones that have been waiting to be engaged.
Thank you. I'll go back to you, Representative Sudzinski, but I think what you're trying to get at is the most important question about all of these tax credits, and also probably just really hard, especially for somebody who's, you know, works in the industry. It's probably not your specialty to do this sort of analysis of the economic market. I'm going to go back to you, but I think that, like, this is the question, right? Is like, when we're spending public dollars on tax credits to try to encourage certain behavior, where's that, like, line between us trying to incentivize certain things and, like, us tossing money at something that would happen anyway? Mm-hmm. So I think if you have comments or maybe questions for our staff, but probably just, you know, Ms. Webby probably isn't in exactly the position, because she's an installer or owns a, or is part of a company that kind of does the on-the-ground work, that maybe that's not appropriate question for her, but I'm just going to go back to you, Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. Just, you know, it just seems like a lot of the other bills that we've heard seem to set limits. So, you know, whether you're, you know, Republicans are for, you know, 100% Social Security, you know, getting rid of the tax on Social Security, but you're setting caps as far as income. And it seems like 9 out of 10, you kind of have the most wealthy, whether it's folks that want to buy an electric car or install kind of a solar array on their business, you know, up and up. Is there, I was kind of just looking at from an eligible standpoint, do you have a lot of those same caps that, you know, you kind of set into an agenda of folks that would qualify for this? Is there like an income limit so that you set so that, you know, you could target this towards the poor? Or anything like that?
I will go to the author, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We, in this bill, two things I'd like to respond on and kind of hit toward what you're talking about. I understand exactly what you're talking about, of that balance that we're trying to achieve and, you know, these programs that go on and on. That's one reason I did opt in this version this year to put a sunset on this bill. So it's only 4 years. And I think that gives legislators in the future an easier way to either restart it if it's still needed, if pricing in the supply chain hasn't improved to the point where this is still valuable to people, to help them get over the hump to make this commitment and invest in their own home with an upfront cost, but then see those savings. So that's one thing. And I think the other part is having an ability in this bill this time to have a rebate to some lower income folks who also want to take that plunge. I did speak to a provider who works in the metro area and said, you know, what I'm really missing is those people who need about a $2,000 to $4,000 boost at the end to make their project feasible. So we added that in this bill as well, and I think that addresses that point that you're making, Representative Sudzinski, and I think those are two positive developments to keep this bill in check in the future, in near term, really, over 4 years, and help some of those who need it who are left out, beyond the fact that this bill addresses those who are left out who are not in service areas where these tax credits are provided already.
Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Manager. I guess just in general, when I think of, you know, tax credits and use as a tool, you know, it's someone's tax dollar going to help with these projects. And, you know, from the little bit that I've read, you know, if this was considered a growing industry, if it was considered fledgling, I'd maybe understand it. But, you know, as far as displacing, you know, industrial solar, like, there's no shortage of installations. There's no shortage of, you know, if anything, we've heard time and time again that, boy, we're desperate to get people that are in these industries to do the work. And you're trying to encourage it. We've had, you know, a bill last year, 2 years ago, that essentially created a school in downtown Minneapolis. I think it might be close to your district to help develop these types of jobs. And if you're so concerned about that the supply chain of labor is hurting, why on the earth are you creating situations for more of it? We already have a shortage of workers in these particular areas. We don't have enough people to go around, to the point that the cost of just putting General Electric in your homes is costing more because there's so much hunger for that labor that the price of labor is going up, that you're making it more unaffordable just to do routine maintenance on your homes. And now we're going to throw $17 or $31 million to a program that's already created shortages in the marketplace. You already don't have enough workers to put solar or electrical issues anywhere in the industry. And I understand something that doesn't exist, but I think just throwing more money at something that people are already going to do with or without it just seems like, I don't know. I get the idea of it, but it doesn't seem like there's a need for this. But I might be wrong. Thanks.
Thank you. Up next, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That sound issues again?
I can hear you, Representative Kosnick. That's all that matters, I think.
I agree with you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if, and the author may not know this question, so maybe House Fiscal, I'm looking at the refundable part of the credit, and I'm wondering why we would give perhaps businesses, but also homeowners, money back beyond that if we left it unrefundable. You to get the credits, and how much that might lower the cost of this bill from $31 million in 2026-27. Do we know how much the refundable part or unrefundable would play into this?
Mr. Williams or Ms. Templin, is that a Ms. Templin question to start with? Ms. Templin?
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I do not have an estimate of this proposal with the credit not being refundable. And I unfortunately do not have an estimate either. There have been, in previous years, there's been other versions, similar versions of the bill that have capped the appropriation and for the credit and have made the proposal non-refundable. That the cost is different. The cost for a credit that is capped is limited to the amount that is provided in the bill. The analysis, you know, for a proposal like that doesn't get into how much of the bill is related to refundability and how much is not refundable. But I can pursue this question after the hearing and get back to you.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Yeah, I think that you guys you wouldn't score, or you'd have to sort of rescore and resubmit under like a different form of the bill in order to get at that question about how much of the cost is related to the refundability, because they probably have to like redo all the analysis of the department. But Representative Kosnick.
Yeah, if we could figure out, you know, there's a huge price tag to this, and as Representative Sudinski pointed out, are we actually just throwing money at it where the market would kind of dictate a certain amount of people interested in this either way? But, you know, so trying to do you a favor, Madam Chair, with, you know, your targets coming out shortly, if there's a way to lower the cost, maybe the author could shed some light on if previous versions of this bill were non-refundable or capped, why are we using the refundable portion in here as opposed to some others that would contain the cost a little bit and be a little more sensitive to using up the chair's target?
Thank you for looking out for my target, Representative Kosnick. Very much appreciate it. Was that a question for the author, or were you sort of?
No, yeah, no.
All right.
Very much I am interested in why we went refundable way this year, and I'm not familiar with the previous versions that were non-refundable or capped, but certainly that's something that would be in the prerogative of the chair of the committee. But is there something we're missing, or can you?
Sure.
Why we
Thank
went
you.
This route?
Yeah, and I think that Ms. Templin might have been referring to, you know, there. I've seen even this year sort of a number of different kind of these tax credit incentive programs for solar panels. So I don't know if Representative Bierman carried that bill and has or a previous version that was non-refundable, but we will go to him for some comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the two issues there. One, the rebate for those who are able to, who aren't paying the tax and want to have participation. We talked about that being mostly a low-income group of folks. So that made sense to me, so that we're reaching more people and letting everybody participate in this transition to the energy transition that will save people money across the board. The cap that was on $5 million in the last few versions of this bill, which did not pass in Minnesota but has in other states, the demand is so high that it fills out within, in Iowa, many times by the end of February, the first year. There was, I mentioned or talked to a Minnesotan from Brainerd who wanted to do solar sense through Minnesota Power. They sold out in one day. So the demand is there. And I look at this revenue forecast. You know, this is money out of the general fund. That's what we're looking at. But we're not able to do dynamic scoring and calculate what's the real dollars that are generated that are taxable incomes for the state if we expand this program and have a lot more systems being put in. I think this number goes down. And we don't do dynamic scoring. Neither this committee nor the health committee will look at programs that cost money but in longer term, longer run, save money. So we see that time and time again in other states where they implement a program. We want to do it here. They have saved money, and that's one of the reasons we do it.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Yeah, just finish up, and I appreciate the answer. Thank you, Representative Bierman. You'd mentioned the demand, and I think that kind of goes to what Representative Sudinski is talking about, that we might be incentivizing the market beyond what needs incentivizing and using $31 million in a least efficient manner. I kind of like the idea of putting a cap, and if $5 million bucks seems to have been well utilized, maybe work off of that number instead of this $31 million bucks.
Thank you for the advice about my target, Representative Kosnick. Much appreciated. We'll be, you know, some of these things are scalable, a lot of these tax credits, right? So we can make them fit in potentially as we move forward. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in discussion here, I have a concern. And out in rural Minnesota, we have a lot of small cooperatives that supply electricity now. If we incentivize more of the programs like this, the infrastructure is built and in place by the cooperatives. If more producers are going to be, you know, homeowners, small businesses, how would the infrastructure be funded? How would it be maintained without a system in place for the funding? Right now the co-ops are paying for the transmission poles, lines, bringing in homes. If the transmission is coming from the house and going the other way, who pays for that?
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Weiner. That's a good question, and it's one that's come up before. I've talked to the energy utility companies, and there's not, you know, it's not as if we put in a couple of units in one community and they have to redo their transmission lines. So there's a lot of capacity. There are very few communities right now that have been circumscribed by the issue of overproduction locally. So that is the distributive energy is a big issue, though, as are the transmission lines. I think that might be one of the biggest issues we face in energy policy with the transition toward cleaner renewables. But it's also a cost. Whether we do nothing in green energy and we just keep the transmission poles we have now, they're aging, they're old, they have to be replaced over time. Xcel had a plan to do that a few years ago. It was billions of dollars. But now with the new lines that are being proposed, we pretty much do have a lot of grid work to do. And I think as we move forward, this is not going to be an issue for small local producers of energy on their own homes. as much as some of the larger projects that are being envisioned out there. And I'll let you, Ms. Webby, say a few more words if that's all right.
Ms. Webby, yeah, we got to probably wrap this conversation up because we have, I think, four other bills, but please go ahead.
So to answer your question, Representative Weiner, about the issue of who maintains infrastructure, who pays for it, there are a lot of policy bills happening in other committees related to using this distributed generation in a manner that aims to and should reduce the cost of maintenance for the greater distribution grid. That is the focus, you know, how to alleviate some of the concerns as far as peak shaving and, you know, transporting energy at times when it's very expensive onto the distribution network of a cooperative. This is something that solar and storage combined have the technological capability to alleviate. We have a long ways to go for that regulatory and policy structure to be in place, but it's something that we should be working towards. And this program helps provide the incentive to get the generation in place to do that work.
Thank you, Ms. Webby. Are you good? He wants to ask another question. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the generation is important, but if we can't maintain the transmission, and those co-ops right now are paying for the poles, the lines, the upgrade, the maintenance, and if the source of power is coming from a different, you know, more rural solar systems, then who is going to be paying for the transmission? If we can create all the energy we want, but if we can't get it to where it needs to be, then it's pointless. So that's my concern.
I think that's a concern that we all share.
Yeah.
Well, pardon me. I think that's a concern that we all share and is perhaps beyond the scope of my ability to answer at this moment with the information in front of me.
Thank you. It sounds like we might need some more conversation with our energy team because you guys are talking about things that I don't exactly understand over here in the tax world. So next up, we have Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be really quick. I was reading through the revenue analysis of this detail, and it says in 2021 there were about 1,100 eligible projects placed in service for 12.4 megawatts. So looking at that, there's no program in place today, right? There's no rebate we're getting or anything like that, or is there a rebate?
Representative Bierman, or you guys are looking at each other.
There is no direct rebate in some areas of Minnesota. So okay. Solar rewards, Minnesota Power has one. So there are a couple of service areas that have them.
And
Representative Joy.
Madam Chair, one of the things that's impressed me is in 2021, we put in 62,000 solar panels when you think of that, because it's 12.4 megawatts, which is 1 megawatt is 5,000 solar panels. So, you know, that's kind of impressive to see. So now I just wonder what kind of growth we're going to see by incentivizing this, or is this a pretty good path to be on without having to throw more money at this? Or I'm just curious on that.
I'm not sure. What are you talking about? What sort of entities are doing this?
No, what's interesting to me is when we talk about, you know, money coming from federal but nothing in our area, and they in 2021 they put in 12.4 megawatts, which was 62,000 solar panels because it takes 5,000 to make 1 megawatt. That's pretty impressive program in 1 year to be producing, and now we're going to entice this with more of a thing, but I think the growth is already there. So I'll be curious to see if by putting this sizable of a rebate in there, if it's going to double that, if we're going to go to 144, and can we handle the capacity of, you know, I mean, what's the maximum in a year? Can you put out 300,000 solar panels? I don't know. You know that because of construction, but 62,000 in 1 year is quite a bit. I guess impressed me when I haven't seen the numbers.
So I think that your line of questioning is back on this issue that Representative Swedzinski first brought up, which is, you know, kind of like how does a tax credit or a rebate interact with this market that exists and this development that is happening in this sector. I'll go to you for closing comments, but unfortunately we're going to have to kind of wrap the discussion up there. But I do appreciate all the discussion today. And I'll go to Representative Bierman. And again, you know, this is going to be in the mix as we're moving forward, and there will be more opportunities since this is being laid over for discussion as we move forward. Representative
Bierman.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing the bill. Great conversation and some questions to think about and to get some answers on for the committee. But we have a long way to go on the amount of power that we can generate with solar power in the state of Minnesota, which would be very helpful. And what this program especially does is it puts the consumer in the driver's seat to obtain the savings of this new solar energy for themselves and lower their own personal rates of electricity generation. And I think everybody should have that liberty and right to do so. And our system will be built around that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Bierman and the testifiers. With that, I renew my motion that House File 2311 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over. Next up, House File 1785. Representative Hornstein, welcome. Welcome back. I can't remember if we've had you. The pleasure of your company and taxes this year so far. That was a previous year. In either case, welcome back. Representative Davids, would you like to move that House File 1785 be laid over?
Madam Chair, I will move House File number 1785, and then I would move the H1785DE1 to create the bill in the shape the author would prefer.
Excellent. Thank you. So Representative Davids has moved that the bill be laid over. Representative Hornstein, would you like to just start out by explaining the author's amendment?
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. It's good to be back in the Tax Committee and presenting this bill as I've done in past years. DE1 amendment is simply a technical change. This language was added in the Senate Committee for clarification, so we want to just line this up with that language.
Perfect. So Representative Davids has moved the DE1. All those in favor of adopting it, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries. The DE1 is adopted, and House File 1785 is in the shape the author prefers. Please present your bill, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So this bill relates to SCORE grants. SCORE stands for Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, and this dates back actually to the early 1990s under Governor Perpich. There was a committee that was set up to figure out how do we maximize recycling in the state. And so they came up with a system where an assessment would be collected on solid waste, and a portion of that would go to counties and other entities, but primarily counties, so that they could ramp up their recycling and now organics composting and waste reduction efforts. And so very simply put, Madam Chair and members, this bill simply aligns our funding with the intent for which this money was originally collected. So there's a portion, 30% of this solid waste fund that goes to the general fund, and we're recapturing it. So it goes for the stated purpose that it was collected. That's really what this is about. And we have a lot of good bipartisan sponsorship of this bill. And so before we get into the testimony, I just wanted to mention that, in the state we have, at least in the metro area, we have a 75% recycling and organics composting goal by 2030, and we're not even close to that. And so we need to make sure that counties and others that are managing these waste reduction and recycling programs have the resources that they need to successfully carry out what we in the legislature have asked them to do. And so I think we know clearly the benefits of recycling and organics composting. We're diverting a lot of waste up to the top of the hierarchy. And in fact, in 2021, according to a report, and there is an annual SCORE report, in 2019, Minnesota saved approximately 4.1 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent using these practices. And that equates to removing annual emissions of, I'll say this is the transportation chair, 891,000 passenger vehicles. So there's significant environmental benefits, and I think benefits as well to our economy. And so Members, we have, I have a couple of county commissioners that are here to testify on behalf of the bill. And again, because this is a statewide effort here, we have a county commissioner from Greater Minnesota and one from the metro area. And so I'm happy to introduce them, but also entertain any questions the committee may have.
Excellent. Let's do testimony and then move to member discussion. So Commissioner Ekstrom, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Nicole Ekstrom. I'm a county commissioner from Freeborn County. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come and speak before you today. This is my first time here, and it's quite an experience. My comments today are also going to be with comments from Commissioner Reinhart, also from Ramsey County. We are here on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Inter-County Association, Solid Waste Administrators Association, and the Partnership on Waste and Energy. We've developed a coalition in support of this effort. Do you want to change the slide, or do you want me to? The Solid Waste Management Tax was created to fund reuse, reduction, and recycling programs. The counties, us, were responsible for the solid waste management, what we obviously call trash, and how it's properly handled. It is a core function of government. What began with regulations in the cities about the locations of city dumps, open burning, has evolved into a system that is quite complex. We see a very large variation in all the materials now that are being thrown away. The Waste Management Act declares how solid waste should be managed by establishing a waste hierarchy, and it sets goals on how much of that waste needs to be recycled. There are many state mandates in now placed on our counties that deal with planning, regulating, operating, financing, contracting, and evaluating, and all of these responsibilities require increase in funding. Today, the Minnesota Waste Management Act reduces risk to public health in the environment by moving waste up that hierarchy. The law also has measures to ensure the safety of people that work with the waste and address the risk of landfills. The state has now spent over $500 million cleaning up landfills, with another $300 to $400 million that's going to be needed through 2050 that does not include the cost to clean up the freeway landfill that is next to the Minnesota River and 35W in Burnsville. We are all paying these expenses through our taxes and through insurance costs, and it's a financial burden that is not going away. In 1988, in the face of mounting trash, litter, and illegal dumping, the governor created a task force called the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, known as SCORE. The SCORE task force recommended a tax based on the cost of trash, resulting in the solid waste management tax to help fund recycling-related programs. This task force recommended all tax revenue go to solid waste management. The tax applies to all trash services, 9.75% tax for residential and approximately 17% for businesses. It is a user tax that now generates just over $100 million annually. 30% or approximately $32.5 million goes into the general fund where it is not used for waste management purposes. SCORE grants help counties meet their state mandated recycling goals. SCORE funds recycling programs, the expansion of organics, and a robust drop-off system for problematic and toxic materials. In the end, most of the costs are being paid by the local government, by local governments. I'll give you just a quick example of Freeborn County. For us, we produce approximately 30,000 tons of waste. 33% is about our rate of recycled materials. We receive about $90,143. This covers about 13% of our costs, so only 13%. Our program costs us a little over $700,000 to implement. We have to offset this with local tax assessments. Last year it was $54 per household. That's going to be increasing into the low 60s. We do focus in Freeborn County heavily on recycling and reuse of household hazardous household waste. People, our environmental services is working very hard to get people, instead of, if you have a little bit of household cleaner, instead of throwing that away, bring it on up to the recycling, up to our center, and other people can come in and use that for free. And we hope then that this reduces people from going out and buying an entire bottle of something if they can come in and just use a little bit up from that has been left over from someone else. And we're seeing greater success with that program. A big issue that we have is electronic waste. And again, being a rural county, we have a tremendous amount of illegal dumping. It is very expensive to take, for example, a computer screen or an old monitor or a TV up to our local landfill. And people then will simply drive out a little bit out of the way to a county road and they'll dump it into our ditches. I live in the country and when I walk my roads almost every single day. And when we see this, not only does it pose a hazard to our mowing equipment, which then of course if they were to hit this, it poses a hazard as well to the drivers. But this is contamination that is dumped directly on our soil. It could be sitting in a ditch full of water or snow as well. So you can see how then these chemicals can get leached into our environment. Freeborn County continues to spend part of that budget that we have on education as well as advertising. Again, trying to entice people to bring their goods into our environmental center. And also our gentleman who runs our environmental services, he does a great job of going into the schools. Some of you, many of you might be too young to remember Hoot Hoot Don't Pollute, but if we can educate the younger generation and shape those habits now, that's also our hope, and that is where some of that money goes as well. So at this time, again, I appreciate your support for HF 1785, helping counties better protect our public health and our environment with solid waste management. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Ramsey County Commissioner Reinhart.
Thank you, Commissioner Reinhart.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Davis.
Is there anyone in this room that opposes this bill?
I'm not putting my hand up this time. We don't know yet. Other than made it Swede, through the presentation.
I mean, Raphael supports it, so I mean.
Representative Hornstein.
I'll comment on that a little bit, Representative David.
Okay, Commissioner Reinhart, welcome to the committee. We are experiencing some time constraints here, so if I could ask you to move relatively quickly through your testimony. Representative Davids only asks that question when we're experiencing some time constraints to help me out. So thank you, Representative Davids. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and yes, I can accommodate that.
Thank you.
I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner, and as was stated earlier, we have counties are the only responsible party by the state of Minnesota for handling the trash. And that's how come the SCORE committee decided that we should have the state should play a part in that. And the fact that the money hasn't come to the local communities is really a huge issue. I had a lot of notes here, and I'm going to try to go through them very quickly, and you can just zip through these things. There's a graph that shows how we have stepped forward to fund the programs by the state, while actually you can see that there's more and more that's being done by the local government, a far majority. Let's see here. Local and other revenue. Counties have to piece together many different ways to fund this, and primarily we get, in Ramsey and Washington counties, we get money through the SCORE account, and we basically turn it over to our municipalities. And they put in their money as well to try to make, to reach the goal of the 75% recycling goal by 2030. Okay, I'm going to slow down just a little bit here, but I'm not going to take long. The recycling and reuse programs run by counties have been successful, and more can and must be done. In 2021, we diverted over 3 million tons of waste recycling and organics programs, and since 2019, an additional 1.1 million tons of solid waste have been reduced. That means greenhouse gases are reduced and kept in recyclables, and reused materials are kept out of the landfill. The resources we currently have are not adequate to meet the state goals to reduce, reuse, and recycle more waste. And again, that is the responsibility that the state put on us and had a form of paying for it, which has not come through. We're losing out on opportunities because of limited resources. The additional SCORE dollars are needed to meet ever-increasing unmet waste needs. And I think the other thing that is important to understand here is the recycling industry itself and what it means. And that is the recycling industry employs over 37,000 Minnesotans and has an estimated $15.7 billion economic impact. By developing local recycling markets, we keep resources, jobs, and businesses here. and we improve the environment. When we are approaching 6 million tons of trash being generated in our state annually, it's pretty clear to me, anyhow, that now is the time to help us move closer to our goal of zero waste. Counties respectfully request that the legislature pass House File 1785 to restore funding for recycling to counties and use the solid waste management tax fee for the ever-increasing solid waste management challenges, since that's what it was intended to do in the first place. Okay.
That was wonderful. Commissioner Reinhart, thank you. We appreciate it. All right. So moving on, those are the testifiers that I have on my list. Member questions, Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a real fast, because I know you want it, but, you know, it was one of the other counties, the previous one from Pillmore County, stated that the money that's generated through the solid waste tax pays for about 10% to 13% of the recycling cost for the county. Would you say that for, you're from Ramsey County or from Hennepin County?
Ramsey, yeah.
Ramsey County. Yep.
Okay. Is that, would you say that's about the same for you?
Commissioner Reinhart.
I'm looking at my staff up there. I believe that is approximately the same amount here. Although we have a much more robust recycling and energy center and some other things, so it may be even less that is paid for.
Thank you. Commissioner Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you. That's just generally what I wanted to. So approximately, so if you think about that, members, you know, if this tax of $100 million, that means the total cost of recycling the taxpayers from a dumping fee, but also from a property tax fee is over $1 billion in the state of Minnesota. So just the cost of recycling and what that is, and I think, you know, our committee should really look very carefully at what is actually happening to that recycled material. We've heard, read all the articles about how it used to go to China, now it's not going anywhere. You know, even you look at how we separate our garbage here at the state capitol into different boxes, and when it leaves the building and goes into one, you know, I mean, we're paying for that, and it's exceptionally expensive, and what is the reality of the situation? And you know, there's, on top of that, we got talk of closing down the HERC in Hennepin County, which accounts for a lot of the disposal for a lot of garbage and generates electricity. You know, those are all intertwined, and this is a exceptionally expensive program, and we really need to look at the results. But we do appreciate the cost and you coming before us. Thank you.
And Madam Chair,
thank you. Yes, Commissioner Reinhart.
I can get you all kinds of data on the how much it costs and what happens with the materials. And it does differ across the state, but I can get information for you and answer some of those questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are more towards something that I don't think we really talked about. When we were talking about organic recycling, when we're talking about recycling, when we're talking about landfilling, the conversation about toxic materials and their impact on cost and disposal and, of course, storage, because that's realistically all that's left in that process. Could you talk a little bit about how that kind of flows into this discussion about SCORE grants?
Commissioner Reinhart.
Thank you. Yes. There's a part of this, part of what we need to do is ramp up our educational materials, because that's where the toxicity issue really comes in, is what you cannot throw into the garbage. But we also have, I mean, we have to deal with it on the other end. And we have, and I can speak for Ramsey and Washington counties, because we have the recycling and energy facility. It's a refuse derived fuel facility in Newport, Minnesota. And we are in the process, in fact, we just awarded a contract for taking organics and, that's a long story, okay, durable compostable bags. You put your organics in it, you throw it in the garbage, and it will be taken out of the garbage at the facility through a robotic system. We also have a robotic system that has been installed to pull out the recyclables that have not been separated at the curb. We have, that makes for the fact that we will have cleaner materials. With the organics, once that is rolled out, and will be rolled out two counties wide, and this is a substantial cost, believe me, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to, you know, do all of this, but we've got it rolling out. It will mean that we will be able to take that, and the contract is to have it go into an anaerobic digester. We are in, and to begin with, it'll be composted. in conjunction with the Midwakaton Sioux in Shakopee. So it's a wonderful partnership there. And ultimately, it will go into pyrolysis, so it will turn into, it'll be gasification. Clean energy from beginning to end. But there's investments that have to go into that, obviously. So that's, so it, it deals with, education is probably the biggest thing as far as toxicity. There's also the design for extended producer responsibility. If you make something that's toxic and you don't have a way to get rid of it in the end so that it's safe, then that should be the producer's responsibility. And I believe that there are some bills up here regarding extended producer responsibility also. It shouldn't fall solely on local governments. And that's the biggest thing that I have spoken at the federal level and at the state level. This is something that we need to fund to make it happen, but it has to be a shared cost as well.
We're running real short on time. Representative Brand, are you okay if we, do you need a follow-up? I don't want us, we're talking about taxes. We don't need to go into recycling policy as deep as maybe we have so far, but if you have something quick, please go ahead.
I'll follow up with you offline, but I've got some concerns because in the organics industry, in my particular area of the world, which is southern Minnesota, there is an organics recycling plant that was actually shut down because of toxic PFAS in the organic materials. And so I'll talk to you after this.
Thank you, Representative Brand. I'm sorry. I'm getting stressed about time. I don't mean to cut anybody off. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hornstein.
Yes. Thank you all very much, and I just wanted to point out very quickly, Representative Davids, you know, there's a very rich history of recycling, even predating, you know, Earth Day, which is when a lot of the modern recycling programs took place. And there's an article, a very interesting article in Time Magazine, November 15th, 2016, that goes through that whole history, and we're all part of it. So let's write the next chapter and make sure that the money intended to go for recycling goes there. This passed in the House Omnibus Bill the previous biennium, and hope we can do that again. So thank you so much for hearing the bill, Madam Chair, and I ask for your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Hornstein. And with that, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 1785, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Davids.
As Chair Hornstein leaves, I'd like to know how long he's been reading Time Magazine.
Representative Hornstein.
Not as long as a good friend of mine named Raphael.
Someone will have to fill me in on Raphael at some point. Next up before the committee, House File 2089. Welcome, Representative Herr. We love seeing you in taxes. Welcome back. I'm going to move that House File 2089 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Herr, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and I only have a short intro of 15 minutes, so thank you for hearing the bill. We're going to give you guys back some time. This bill is actually really simple. It just modifies prior legislation for the City of St. Paul that relates to bonding, and what it's trying to do is the authority ends in 2024, and we want to extend it to 2035, and we want the principal amount increased from $20 million to $30 million. I had a lot more to say, but I'm going to cut it all out. I do have my testifier here from the City of St. Paul, John, sorry. We worked together for 5 years. I can't remember his name.
This
John.
Guy. Okay.
So he can answer any questions you all have and give you and have any testimony he wants to share with you all.
Thank you very much, Representative Herr. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez, committee members. I'm John McCarthy. I'm the finance director for the City of St. Paul. Here to testify in support of House File 2089 very quickly. St. Paul was granted this authority to issue capital improvement bonds in 1971. The authority is set to expire, as Representative Herr said, in 2024. We are looking to extend that out to 2035 and also looking to increase the cap that St. Paul is allowed to borrow annually from $20 million to $30 million per year. Since its enactment in 1971, this bill has been amended several times to extend that authority and to increase the cap on borrowing. So this is the last time we increased the cap was in 2002, and it was raised to $20 million at that point, and it's been flat since then. Just real quickly on kind of what we use these bonds for in St. Paul, it's everything from, you know, rec centers, libraries, police stations, fire stations, parks and trails, neighborhood playgrounds. We've used them to invest in, you know, region-wide amenities like the visitor center at Como Zoo, as well as, you know, local benefit community centers like the Frogtown Community Center, also doing the new parks at the Highland Bridge development. And in general, it's one of our primary tools to maintain the city facilities that we have. And so we're, again, looking just for that 10-year extension and the increase from $20 million to $30 million. And with that, happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. So you spoke a little bit about what you spent, what your plan is. That what your plan is? Is there for is what you're going to use the extra $10 million in bonding authority is to only do those particular types of projects when it comes to infrastructure?
Mr. McCarthy.
Madam Chair, Representative, at this time we don't have any specific plans to come up against that cap. It's just really to allow us that flexibility over the next 10 years, as we've seen in the last few years where interest rates have been really wildly fluctuating, construction costs have gone up. It's nice to be able to know that we might be able to bundle several projects in 1 year and then maybe take a year off, and that higher cap gives us that opportunity to do that. But don't have any other specific plans at this point to go up to that cap.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so you know, so you would use this bonding authority against essentially the property tax. So use the property tax to repay the bond that you would do. Are there other tax increases that you're looking to put on the people? Are you coming to the legislature? Is this the only thing that you're doing, like sales tax stuff? What else is the city of St. Paul looking to do?
Mr. McCarthy.
Madam Chair, Representative, just to clarify on this bill specifically, we've kept the borrowing flat in the 15 plus years that I've been at the city. We've been borrowing $11 million per year to manage that tax burden on our residents. I anticipate, as I said, that we would continue to keep that tax burden manageable for our residents. We are looking at a wide array of infrastructure funding plans for the city of St. Paul. As our elected officials have talked about publicly, we have a significant backlog in street infrastructure needs as well as facility needs. This source that we have right here is primarily for buildings. So this gets at our, you know, if we need to replace a roof on a fire station or windows at a police station, this is the tool that we use to do that. We are looking at potentially some other sources for street infrastructure in particular.
Representative Swedzinski. Good. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be a question for staff, but what is it about this request that requires them to come before the legislature?
Mr. Cope?
Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, I would need to check.
Okay. Mr. McCarthy, do you know?
Madam Chair, this is a special statute that grants this authority to the City of St. Paul. A lot of other cities have similar or their own charters have allowed them to do this. Since 1971, this has been the tool that we use, and it's worked really well for us, and so that's why we're here today, is to look for that extension. Potentially through a charter change, we could, you know, maybe do this on our own, but this has been a good tool for us.
Representative Elkins?
No, I just, in Bloomington, we did bonds all the time and never had to request state authority to do so. So I was just wondering what is it that's peculiar about these bonds that they have to come to us.
Maybe House Research can send that out to send it to Mr. McQuillan, and he'll send it out to the committee. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you. And just a follow-up, that just sparked another question in my mind. But, you know, if you're looking to expand your bonding authority, but you also have other potential, I think you have a sales tax request potential increase that's coming before potentially this committee as well. Is your goal to use that sales tax increase to pay these bonds rather than property taxes?
Madam Chair.
Mr. McCarthy.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, we would continue to use property taxes. These are local, general obligation bonds, continue to use property taxes to repay those. And sales tax would be in a new, an additional funding source for our street projects that doesn't currently exist today.
All right. Thank you. Is there any further member discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hurd, do you have any closing comments for us?
Just quickly, yes. Our city does have a lot of needs, and if you guys don't want to approve laws for us, you can approve some of these things. And we do have great city needs. Some of the requests we have sometimes are outside of our ability within this, like when we ask for capital investment for our bridges and for the different projects that we have, that those things exceed what this ability within this particular tool. And so there are, our city, we are the capital city. We do have a lot of needs, and it would be the best interest of all of us here that we include this into your omnibus. So thank thank you so much for consideration, and we ask for your support.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Herr. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2089 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over. All right. Next up, looks like I lost most of my MFT people, but thank you so much for being here, Minneapolis Federation of Teachers. You're our educators of our kids in the city that I get to represent. Always happy to see you all here. First up, we have Representative Cleavorn with House File 2340. Welcome to the committee. Back to the committee. Representative Cleavorn, and I'm going to move that House File 2340 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Please explain your bill.
Thank you very much. What I'd like to do is just say thank you, Chair Gomez and Lee Davids and the members of the committee, for hearing 2340, a bill permitting a tax credit of $2,500 for individuals seeking a master's degree in special education as defined in the bill. This bill came to me from my local teachers in Osseo, Robbinsdale, and Wayzata, requesting help from the state to better serve the students of our state. Further, it was expanded at the request of the deaf hard of hearing community to include deaf hard of hearing, as well as the blind visually impaired. I have worked with the Council on Disabilities as well. These are areas of teaching that have been described as shortage areas by the Office of Higher Education. In Minnesota, there are nearly 150,000 students who receive special education services, and they are being served by fewer than 15,000 teachers. Underserved students are at the very heart of this legislation. In the words of my constituent teachers, as teachers, we feel that we are constantly learning as kids change. We adapt to teach them in the best way possible. This bill hopefully will help teachers who want to help kids with special needs to have the means to do so. Teaching is a calling, and special education is such an important part of our schools. Madam Chair, normally I would bring testifiers with me, but as we are hearing this bill, the deaf hard of hearing community is having their rally day in the Capitol. So I'm here to answer any questions. Please be gentle on me.
Thank you very much, Representative Cleavorn. We will do our best. Is there any question or discussion on the bill, on House File 2340? Representative Howard.
Representative Cleavorn, as long as you don't have a testifier, I'll just offer a note of support from my mom, a retired special education teacher who got her master's degree. Well, I remember her working hard to get it. And I also remember her spending most weekends doing paperwork all weekend. Special ed teachers spend all week teaching and will spend every moment they can with their kids and put off all of the work that they have to do with paperwork with that burden as well. And folks are getting burnt out. It's such an important job. And so I just know that Cheryl Howard would support this bill and wanted to offer her support in way of you not having testifiers. So.
Sure.
Thank you for that, Representative Howard. And some of our educators in the audience were nodding their heads emphatically as you were talking about the paperwork that they have to do and how they have to work to balance that with maximizing the time with their kiddos. So thank you for that. Is there any further discussion? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just Representative Cleavorn, thank you as well. As a para in the classroom with kiddos with special needs, I see firsthand how hard these teachers work and that extra education and training that could come with a master's degree is very, very important for working with this vulnerable population. So thank you.
All right. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Cleavorn, any closing remarks for us? We did take it easy on you, didn't we? We were a little rough on you last time you were in taxes, I think, so we're making up for it today.
I would say the last time I was here, you were brutal, but that's a different descriptor. Thank you very much for your consideration. It's something that we really need in our state, and I ask that you please include this in your final bill. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing this forward. So with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2340 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and it is laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. All right, next up, Representative Erdahl is here with House File 2404. Welcome to the committee, Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Madam Chair, I will move House File number 2404, and I hope it doesn't take quite as long as the Erdahl bill yesterday.
With that, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that depends on the speaker.
All right. There is Representative Davids. Did you want to move the A1 amendment?
So move, Madam Chair.
Great. Representative Erdahl, would you explain the A1 to us briefly? Or maybe we can have nonpartisan explain it if that is your preference, Representative Erdahl.
I don't have an amendment in front of me.
I think it sounds like we should go to nonpartisan then. Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez, Representative Erdahl, and members, the A1 amendment would just add a definition of special education program to the bill. So the bill, similar to the bill we heard previously from Representative Cleburne, would add special education degrees to the list of master's programs that qualify for the credit. But the bill in front of us does not have a definition of special education, so this would, the amendment would just add one.
Excellent.
Madam Chair, I renew my motion on the amendment.
All right. Representative Davids has renewed his motion on the A1 amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the form the author would like. Please go ahead with your description. We like having you here, Rep. Erdahl.
Thank you very much. Chair Gomez, Lee Davids, and members, thank you for hearing this bill. A few years ago, we passed a tax credit for teachers to help them reimburse them for costs of getting a master's degree in a content area. We had teachers who had been teaching college in the classroom for years, but were required to get a master's degree. This original bill was to relieve some of that cost through a tax credit. We find that the bill needs just a little bit of tweaking, and that's what this is today. This bill expands the credit to getting an initial teaching license, adding a teaching license in a shortage area, or getting a master's in special education. As you all know, we have a significant teacher shortage in Minnesota, especially in special education, and we need to do a better job in recruiting, retaining, and through master's degrees, to some degree, improving our teacher task force. There are bills to help pay for tuition and student loan debt, to provide mentors and payment for student teaching. We should be, by the way, that last one was also one of my bills. We should be doing all we can to recruit and retain teachers. This bill is a small part of that effort. If you include this bill in the tax omnibus bill, we hope it will inspire people to finish their teaching license. It will help teachers who are already teaching to get an additional license, one that the district might desperately need, and it will help our current special education teachers who want to move across the salary schedule and help them not only to get paid a bit more, but to give them tax relief as they complete their degree. So, Madam Chair, that completes my testimony. I do have a testifier here.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Welcome to the committee. Thanks so much for being here. Please introduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Hi, Madam Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Tequila Laramie. I am the 2021-2022 Education Support Professional of the Year and the 2022-2023 Minnesota nominee for the RISE Award. I am currently an associate educator at Bethune Elementary in Minneapolis, and I have been an ESP for 11 and a half years. I've come to seek in support of this bill because I am a first-generation college student. One day I saw a commercial for a college, so I applied and registered, not knowing the mistake that I was making because it was a for-profit college. 2 years later, I graduated with an associate's degree and $70,000 in student loan debt. Here I am now struggling to pay for college out of pocket. I'm 7 classes away from graduating with my bachelor's in elementary education and my teaching license, but I have been out for several years because I struggle paying out of pocket. I know I could receive $2,500, or knowing that I can receive $2,500 back on my taxes once I graduate and get my teaching license would be a small weight lifted off my shoulders and give me the much needed push I need to go back. With this bill, once I graduate, $2,500 could go a long way. I could pay a small portion of my student loans. I could pay for surgery on my wrist that's not covered by insurance. I could buy supplies for my future classroom. I could pay my mortgage and other accumulated bills. $2,500 could pay for the MTLE tests that are not free and are required to teach after paying for college. I believe this bill would encourage many ESPs like myself to go back to college and complete their teaching license and increase the number of teachers and teachers of color in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Laramie, and thank you for what you do for our kids in Minneapolis. We appreciate it, and for staying, you know, your commitment to staying in the profession, even though it's hard and you know, it comes at cost to you. We really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Is there any discussion to the bill? Representative Olson B.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just because Representative Howard spoke favorably to the last bill, I will put my little cent in the penny jar here. I used to be a social studies teacher for a number of years, just got my master's last year, and I'm a very firm believer that we want to have our teachers educated to the best possible ability that we can, because there was a study that was done when we were doing some continuing education years ago. An individual came and showed us a study, and they said, you know, you can feed kids breakfast, you can feed kids lunch, you can do this, you can talk about homework, you can talk about small class sizes, you can do all these things, but one of the very highest identifiers for student achievement is whether or not the student thinks that their teacher knows what they're talking about. So a student will learn at a greater level if they truly believe that their teacher knows what they're talking about. And I'm sure that everyone who's had a college course with a professor that they thought, oh man, this person doesn't know what they're talking about, you didn't learn very much from that teacher. But when you had a teacher who you absolutely believed knew everything that there was to know about the subject, you learn from that in confidence. You know, I taught seventh grade, so it was really easy to think about every single possible question a seventh grader might have had. But having a master's degree and encouraging our teachers to get that master's degree will, in fact, help educate our students here in the state of Minnesota. It's a great idea. Thank you, Representative Ertl, for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ertl, for advancing this. I guess two notes of caution that jump into my mind. One is, and I should say that I'm thinking about this in terms of educating young kids, because that's where my head often goes, and I've been thinking about this. If you are starting off in your teaching career, you are very likely going to have pretty limited income coming in. And so I guess maybe one question just to confirm is, is this a refundable credit, or does this require somebody to shell the money out and then wait until the following year to get a credit back? Maybe I'll ask that question first, Madam Chair, if I can.
Yeah, Rev. Ertl, if you don't mind, I'm just going to go over to my House researcher, Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Pinto, it's non-refundable.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess that's one concern I have, right, is just thinking about if we're trying to encourage folks to come into the profession and knowing what economic squeeze people are in at that point in their career. That's a challenge with structuring it this way. And then I guess I'm also just then comparing and just, you know, reminding folks that when we're talking about education and learning below the age of five, we've got a real gap right now in terms of what we're doing supporting folks coming into that really critical profession area as well, which is not a reason not to be investing in the needs in the K-12 area too. So I guess just sort of a note of caution that we want to be thinking, I guess, about encouraging folks. I'll also know too, we have significant disparities in our state. We know that those are linked to economics. We want to be having teachers of a variety of backgrounds coming in, and maybe that some of those maybe in particularly difficult circumstances to float the money they shell out and then wait another year to get a non-refundable credit back. So really like the intention, and we'll just want to think about kind of how we address it from a policy perspective. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, first of all, non-refundable is the current law. That's what we're doing now. If you want to change that at some time in the future, I don't have any objections to that, just the way that it is structured right now. I'll just give you a little background on when I started this, why I did. I saw, I don't know how many, a lot of teachers, when they were getting their education for their master's degrees, were not getting it in what they teach. The most common degrees were in administration or pedagogy. And to me, that did not have the direct impact in the classroom that I wanted to see. And so the purpose of this was to give an incentive for teachers to get master's degrees in their content areas in what they teach. And essentially, that's what this little addition is doing as well. it got a little bit complicated with elementary teachers because they teach a lot of things. So it was, okay, you can get a degree in one of the areas. It might be reading, might be math. I mean, you teach these things, so pick one and get a master's in it. And, you know, the same with special education. There are areas where there are programs and study that they could get master's in developmental disabilities, early childhood special education, emotional behavioral disorders, things that they deal with, autism, those types of things. So there are areas where they could get their master's. Yeah, just trying to do more to ensure that teachers are getting their additional education in areas that actually can impact their classroom. That's why I did this.
Yeah, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, and thanks for that explanation. I guess I'm wondering, did you consider in the course of even putting this together, and I know this is existing law, and of course we can change it, did you consider, you know, providing the education for folks in the first place rather than having the system where they, you know, they spend money and then there's tax credit later? I guess I'm comparing, I went to business school, I have an MBA, and had worked in, there's folks who are working in, you know, management consulting and finance and various things that pay a lot. And what, and companies, and what they'll do is somebody will work at a company, make quite decent living, then they get a business degree that the company actually pays for, and maybe the deal is they then have to be at the company for several years. And so I'm just sort of just reflecting here if that's something that you'd consider, to instead simply paying for people's education as long as they commit to then stay in teaching for a certain amount of time as an alternative approach.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, I'm certainly open to looking at future, at other options in the future. You know, this is where we are now. I want to make sure that it is in going to teachers who are teaching and trying to get a master's. Other options can be explored as we go forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And, yeah, I mean, I think that your question kind of brings up something that we have to always think about in taxes, which is, like, is a tax credit the right policy approach to solving the issue that we're seeking to solve here? Or is there a direct appropriation through a grant program through the Office of Higher Education? I'm just thinking here, right, like, that could use this $30 million instead of putting it as a tax credit, which, to your point, you kind of have to, like, pay for it up front, so you have to have that financial wherewithal rather than getting the cash. So so I appreciate you bringing that question up, because we kind of have to think about that with all of the tax credits that are in front of us. Any further discussion? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will renew my motion that House File 2404, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Excellent. Representative Erdahl, did you have any closing comments you wanted to share with us?
No, just thank you very much for the opportunity to present this to you. And in the words of Chair Davids, it's another fine piece of Erdahl legislation.
Representative Davids.
Fine piece.
Fine piece. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. And with that, House File 2404 is laid over. Just looking forward for the week, folks. On Thursday, we're going to be hearing House File 300, which is a Lissagard bill, which provides a full exemption for the Social Security, or what is it called? Social Security tax exemption, the full Social Security tax exemption, and a bill from Jess Hansen, which provides, which expands the subtraction, House File 1040. So looking forward to seeing everybody back here on Thursday. Should be a good time. All right. And with that, we are adjourned.